We're back in order. We have item number 9, which is information item on Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, SGMA, and Associated State and Regional Board Responsibilities / Actions. And we have Eric Ekdahl, is that correct, from the Groundwater Management Program Manager, Office of Research, Planning, and Performance, State Water Resource Control Board. And I see you have someone else do you need to introduce?
Yep, I'll introduce them when we are, if we're ready to start, and we'll go from there.
We are. I did want to ask you, just try and learn something every meeting. What does the Office of Research, Planning, Performance, State Water Resource Control Board do? What's your duties, briefly?
Prior to the incorporation of the groundwater unit, it was really long-term kind of planning and program development at the board. So they were responsible for kind of progress reports, the training academy, and making sure that staff had training resources, and then really managing meetings and developing the State Water Board's groundwater plan or groundwater strategic plan. When the unit was developed in 2014, we were placed in the Office of Research, Planning, and Performance with the idea that it would kind of be a long-term development project to see what we would do with respect to groundwater. We were actually formed before SGMA occurred. So we started kind of early 2014, and we started hearing rumors that there'd be this new groundwater legislation coming in, and we were like, oh yeah, that'll never pass, that'll never happen. And then all of a sudden it did, and we were kind of ready and situated to take on SGMA.
All right, thank you.
So thank you for the introduction. I'm Eric Ekdahl with the Office of Research, Planning, and Performance. I'm here today with one of the staff from the Groundwater Management Unit, Samuel Bolin Bryan. He's a water resources control engineer out of the University of Iowa, or is it Iowa State?
Iowa,
very good. And he is the designated Region 1 liaison in all things SGMA, at least from the State Board's perspective. We have 8 staff in the unit, and we've kind of set up individual liaisons to each of the units so that if there are questions on SGMA or groundwater management, that there's somebody that the regional board staff can communicate with directly and that we can relay comments and questions up through. Today I'll talk a little bit more about the State Water Board's role in sustainable groundwater management, specifically the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or what's referred to as SGMA. SGMA is kind of a new paradigm in California water law. It's been referred to as the single biggest change in water law policy since the water rights protocols were laid down in 1914. The talk I'll give, I sometimes have a couple of background slides about what got us into SGMA. I'm largely going to skip over those today. It talks about land use. It talks about the drought. You know, it shows those pictures of the snowpack 2011 versus 2014 that we've all seen at this point. And then really kind of talk more specifically about an overview of SGMA, the activities that the Water Board and the Department of Water Resources are working on together, and then maybe other program work as we go forward. So SGMA itself, it's actually a package of 3 bills, AB 1739, SB 1168, and SB 1319. They were signed by the governor on September 16th, 2014, and became effective January 1st, 2015. It basically spells out how a certain set of groundwater basins in the state, and I'll talk about this in a couple of slides, need to start directly managing their groundwater resources in a sustainable manner. And one of the key elements of SGMA, if you look at how the bills are structured, how the law is actually laid out, is this kind of statement that's highlighted at the bottom. A central feature of these bills is the recognition that groundwater management in California is best accomplished locally. And so SGMA really sets up a structure where local efforts, local public agencies have every opportunity to directly kind of take on the challenge of managing their groundwater resources in a sustainable manner. But it also recognizes that in some circumstances, if local efforts aren't successful, there may need to be kind of a state backstop. And there's an intervention process where the State Water Board and the Department of Water Resources can directly get involved, and in some cases or some scenarios end up directly managing the resources of that basin itself. So a couple of SGMA basics. SGMA requires the formation of something called a Groundwater Sustainability Agency, or GSA. in 127 high and medium priority basins. And I'll show a map of where those basins are located in the next slide. Those sustainability agencies are then also responsible for setting up groundwater sustainability plans. And it's through those plans and actions in those plans that they'll actually implement the tools to manage the basin. SGMA authorizes new management tools for local agencies. And some of these new management tools are pretty comprehensive. The GSAs can now levy fees, they can conduct investigations, they can limit pumping in some circumstances. So it's a broad new set of authorities once those GSAs are formed. It defines a time frame for accomplishing goals. Basically, the GSAs have a couple of years to put together their plans, and I'll talk about that again in a couple slides. And then within 20 years of plan implementation, those basins must be sustainable. There's also an alternative if users can't, or if users can show that the basin has already been sustainably managed. So there's kind of this opt-out process if you can demonstrate, well, we've been managing our basin sustainably, our groundwater levels are relatively constant over time, and we're not in a condition of overdraft, then you don't have to go through the SGMA process. And then lastly, it also creates a state backstop. So this is what SGMA looks like. And with this, I'm actually going to turn it over to Sam, and he'll kind of give a description of where the basins are statewide, and then also look specifically at Region 1. And I think he'll highlight some of the specific basins in the region that may be subject to SGMA going forward.
Hi. So as Eric said, I'm the Region 1 liaison, Sam Bull and Brian. I'm going to touch briefly on one of the key parts of SGMA that determines applicability, and that's the prioritization process that was kind of rolled in from an older prioritization that the Department of Water Resources did for the California Statewide Groundwater Elevation Monitoring Program. It's a mouthful, but the acronym is CASGEM. And so that CASGEM prioritization was based on these 8 criteria. And what SGMA did was, on the 8th criteria, it tacked on this additional consideration of impacts, adverse impacts to local habitat or local stream flows. And through evaluating these 8 criteria, the DWR, the Department of Water Resources, came up with 127 high and medium priority basins. And the reason that they say this determines the applicability of SGMA is that's where state intervention applies. So it's where the state water board can step in and do a plan for the locals if they don't take action. So SGMA actually applies to all of the basins, but those are the 127 high and medium are where it's sort of mandatory. And although there's 8 criteria, the strong drivers are population and total water use. And so as we kind of zoom in to Region 1, there's only 8 medium priority basins and a lot of very low priority basins. And kind of the reason that is there was an initial cutoff that DWR did in the prioritization process based on total water use. But those 8 priority basins are listed there. There's also 2 low priority basins, which kind of their score is close to the threshold to get into medium. And that's relevant because the department will kind of be reprioritizing over the course of the next 6 months as they reevaluate that additional criteria that SGMA added for impacts to stream flow caused by groundwater pumping. And so kind of zooming in to the north part, here's the bulk of the basins, and these are kind of the key basins where that they will be implementing groundwater sustainability plans. And then as we move to the southern part, there's Ucai Valley and Santa Rosa Plains. And I'm going to hand it back over to Eric.
Cool. Thank you for that description. And then next, we'll kind of, now that you've seen where SGMA applies in the region and statewide, we'll talk about what the key SGMA requirements are for those basins. First, as previously mentioned, they need to develop 1 or more groundwater sustainability agencies. GSAs have to be developed by July 1st, 2017. They can be comprised of 1 or more agency, but if there is more than 1 agency per basin, those agencies need to develop a coordination agreement on how they're going to jointly manage the resources going forward. Once the GSA is established, they need to prepare a groundwater sustainability plan. Sometimes you see these abbreviated as GSPs. Those are due in either 2020 or 2022, depending on the condition of your basin. And the 2020 date is really applicable only to those basins that the Department of Water Resources has defined as in critical conditions of overdraft. There are no basins in critical conditions of overdraft in Region 1. In fact, they're almost primarily universally located south of Sacramento. All other high and medium priority basins need to have their plans developed by January 31st, 2022. Those plans need to spell out measurable objectives, implementation milestones, and they need to submit annual reports that include water use, extraction, and change in storage information directly to the Department of Water Resources. Finally, those plans need to achieve sustainability 20 years after plan adoption. So if you carry that 20, you know, so it's either 2040 or 2042, and they need to prevent undesirable results. Now, fortunately, SGMA defines what sustainability means as the management and use of groundwater in a manner that can be maintained during the planning and implementation horizon without causing undesirable results, and then further lists those undesirable results as the significant and unreasonable chronic lowering of groundwater, reductions in groundwater storage, seawater intrusion, degradation of water quality, land subsidence, and surface water depletions that adversely impact beneficial uses of that surface water. Interestingly, SGMA does not define what significant and unreasonable is. And so in most circumstances, this is going to be a locally defined definition. So the locals will be able to basically pick their own level that they will be regulated at, which is kind of an unusual way to frame a state law. If you do have an undesirable result, you open yourself up to state intervention. And there are essentially four trigger dates that we can highlight that could result in state board intervention. The first is June 30th, 2017. That's the deadline for that GSA formation. So if you don't form a GSA by that date, then there's a series of board actions that we can implement that I'll describe in a couple of slides. In January 31st, this is specific to basins that are in a condition of critical overdraft. The board can intervene if there's no sustainability plan where just nothing has been done, or where the Department of Water Resources, in consultation with the state board, finds that the plan is not being implemented or is inadequate. So they looked at the plan, they review it, and they find that it's failing, then the department can essentially fail the plan and refer it to the board, where the board takes additional enforcement actions. This is true in 2022 for all of the other high and medium priority basins. Again, if there's no plan or if the DWR makes that finding. But in 2022, there's an additional requirement that the board makes a finding that the basin's in long-term overdraft. We don't need to do this in 2022 or 2020 because essentially the department has already defined it as in critical conditions of overdraft. If we do that in 2022, then we need to make that additional finding on top of that. And then lastly, in 2025, at this point, you know, everyone should have a plan, but if DWR finds that there's inadequacy in the plan or it's not being implemented, and then the board additionally finds that there are significant depletions of interconnected surface water, we can also intervene. The key kind of takeaway point in this last slide is that in all of this, there's no circumstance where the board can just decide on their own to unilaterally step in and intervene. Each one of the intervention points comes with a clear and well-defined local failure, for lack of a better word. The locals have to fail before the state can do anything. So what are the board's specific roles? I'll talk about three roles in particular. The first is as a data manager. And then once we've managed some data, we might take the role of being a full-on basin manager. And then throughout this whole process, there's this role of coordination with the Department of Water Resources. It's, you know, again, kind of an unusual setup where we are asking the department to develop a set of regulations that will govern what goes into a sustainability plan, how the department who's responsible for evaluating that plan will actually do that evaluation. But then, you know, it's once the department makes a finding, then they refer it over to the board for actual enforcement. So it's almost a multi-agency enforcement mechanism. So in that process, there's a lot of communication, a lot of outreach, a lot of regulation development, and then just really coordinating and working out how we're going to implement the backstop once it moves forward. So the first thing that we'll talk about is this role as a data manager, and this is specifically to something we're calling potentially unmanaged areas, or PUMAs. I've said this before, but that acronym hasn't quite caught on like I've wanted it to. So when you go out and you talk about these, So a PUMA is essentially some place that doesn't form a GSA. And there's no management action, and they're just unmanaged areas.
Coming around wild.
Yep. That date is July 1st, 2017, where that's the first backstop. Sigma is very specific in what happens in PUMAs. And basically, groundwater extractors in PUMAs have to start reporting data directly to the State Water Board. And the water code spells out what has to be reported, the place of extraction, so essentially the well location, monthly records of how much water is being pumped, what the water is being used for, where it's being applied. And then if we actually take a further step and designate a probationary basin, which is kind of the next step beyond in terms of enforcement, we can actually write into, or we can develop regulations that could ask for additional information if we need it. To do that, we're going to need some sort of reporting system. You know, if you can imagine all the different unmanaged areas that might be out there in the state, if it's a relatively small area, then, you know, maybe it's a couple of wells or maybe a dozen wells that come into the state. We could probably handle that with one single staff person. He or she could look at, you know, individual records, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But you can also imagine, what if it's that whole area kind of in the middle of the Central Valley? Then we're talking about thousands or tens of thousands of wells. And so we're going to need some sort of electronic system where we're envisioning that it will be a self-reporting system where the locals will go on and directly report their own well usage directly to the State Water Board. Really, the reason we're doing this data management is with an eye towards the next step. Once we manage that data, we have to make an evaluation of whether the basin is being managed sustainably or is likely to be managed sustainably. And if not, we take the next steps of designating them as probationary and writing a management plan for them. So the data that we need to get really has to key into those future interim plans as we would need to develop them. There would be fees associated with anything that's reported to the board. So if you have to start reporting to the board as part of that PUMA reporting system, there will be a fee associated with it, likely some sort of flat fee with a volumetric rider. We should be developing those fees in the next couple of months, although they're not due until 2017, and then there'll be an extensive public outreach process associated with it. It's kind of an unusual public outreach process in that no one pays these fees if they do what they're supposed to do. They'll probably pay other fees to their GSA, but they won't be paying them directly to the state. And so we have to go out and say, you know, we hope you never have to pay these fees, and we hope you don't mess up. But if you do mess up, what do you think? You know, how reasonable do these sound? It is kind of an unusual kind of outreach process. There's going to be a public interface associated with whatever we come up with here. So the well information that comes in with some limited privacy exemptions is going to be made public. The timeline for this, we're in the scoping process now. We likely will begin stakeholder outreach maybe in January, February, maybe March of 2016. And start a bidding process, select vendor, system design by the summer of this next year. It has to be up and running by July 1st, 2017, which means we really need a beta system up and running by January 1st of 2017. So a little under a year, that's a very ambitious timeline. If we look at the data that comes in and decide that the basin is not being managed sustainably, we need to take additional roles and actually become the basin manager itself. In this process, we're going to develop fees to support the basin management. Sigma actually requires that the board recoup costs associated with any kind of intervention activity. We'll designate the basin as probationary. It leads to the development of interim sustainability plans, and then we use those plans to manage the basin until local efforts come up to speed. One thing worth noting is that there are numerous off-ramps all throughout this process. So, you know, we can start all of this, but if local efforts suddenly, they develop their GSA, or they develop their own plan, or they get together and, you know, kind of agree on a funding structure to do all this and actually make the plan adequate and implementable, then the board is required legislatively to kind of step off and let the locals take the reins again. the fees, I'm not really going to go into this, and there's a missing number here. That's July 1st, 2017. But the fees need to be in place roughly with the data reporting system. Throughout all this activity, a lot of the early work falls to the Department of Water Resources. So they've been developing basin boundary revision regulations, and those were actually just approved on Monday. So they are now officially kind of on the books. The basin boundary revision process essentially allows local agencies to request to the Department of Water Resources that they redefine the boundaries of their Bulletin 118 groundwater basin. The department is identifying basins that are in critical conditions of overdraft. The last update to this list was in 1980. They've revised it. They have a draft version that's out there at the in front of the California Water Commission, and I think it should be approved in the next week or two. They added a couple of new basins, specifically Paso Robles and Indian Wells Valley, and then a couple of others in the Central Valley. They're updating basin priorities, as Sam mentioned. They're looking at that CASGEM prioritization, adding in this new component, essentially looking at how groundwater pumping affects or could affect ecosystem resources. And then they'll update that probably by 2017 in time for a Bulletin 118 interim update. Key to all of the DWR activities are developing regulations for sustainability plans and how these plans will be reviewed. These are really the kind of the central element of SGMA. They are really going to define what has to go into a plan, what the local agency has to demonstrate in terms of showing that they're sustainable, and then it will spell out specifically how the department is going to use those plan reports to judge adequacy and whether or not the plan's being successful. And again, there's significant communication and outreach. And DWR did get about $100 million in terms of Prop 1 funds specifically allocated for SGMA. There's $10 million available right now for stressed counties or counties with stressed basins, really looking at counties that might be interested in developing ordinances or permitting projects that limit new development or new kind of well installations during the middle of the drought. The remaining $83 million or so, there's another $7 million that DWR will use to administer the program, should be coming out with a project solicitation in the next couple of months. And those will be used specifically for developing the plans themselves. We're coordinating with the department. We've developed several coordination teams. We have a communication team, a planning team, a data team, and then a regulatory team, kind of working with them to help define what's in those regulations. You know, they're setting up the kind of review element, but we also, since we're the enforcement entity, need to make sure that whatever they set up in terms of review works in terms of how the board structure can function in terms of, you know, evaluating the plans and then using them as in the state backstop. In some cases, DWR is responsible for evaluating and accepting the plans, but the board is responsible for implementing the backstop, identifying probationary basins, writing the interim basin management plans, and using that to manage the basin. We can request that the department conduct investigations and provide technical assistance. And in some cases, we can't actually designate a probationary basin without first consulting with DWR. And the code is not very descriptive on what consultation with DWR actually means. So we're working that out and trying to put that into a more codified section or language. In terms of what are we doing going forward, you know, SGMA has some timelines, but if you look at where the board can actually step in, it's not until 2017, 2020, 2022, or even 2025. And so we have some time to work on some other materials. First, we're working on this fee schedule. We're working on our data capture system, and we're working very intently and diligently with the department in crafting and developing those sustainability plan regulations. In the meantime, we can look at some of our existing authorities. You know, the board has always had waste and unreasonable use authority. There's the public trust doctrine, Water Code Section 2100, which allows for a board adjudication where there's or a board referral to adjudication if there's a significant threat to water quality. And then this subterranean stream category where the board essentially manages groundwater extractions like a surface water diversion. We want to support DWR in the early years. They really have a bunch of regulations that they need to develop in the next 6 months or so. They have a very ambitious timeline. Support areas that want help in the early years, and then know where areas may be better functioning without the board's help. You know, we've gone to a number of public meetings where we've actually gone in and kind of played the bad guy and said, if you don't get things together, you know, we'll come in and regulate you. In other places, that's not really effective. And the local process is working well, and we don't want to, you know, tromp in there where we're not welcome or needed, and we're trying to use as light of a touch as we can going forward. We want to use our tools sparingly, but we want to be strategic and effective when we do so. And, you know, we need to know when we need to intervene and how we're going to do it. And that's kind of what we've been working on over the last couple of months. So with that, I'll leave you with some contact information. I do want to point out we have a website that's kind of a long, lengthy website, but we do have a lot of material there. We just held a number of Sigma outreach workshops where we have flyers that talk about potential board funding, that trigger slide that I showed earlier, and a couple of other things. And it's been helpful and useful information. And I'd encourage anyone who's interested to look at it. And I can also send some of the materials as a PDF. But with that, we'll take any questions that you have. And thank you very much for having us.
Board members. Thank you, Mr. Juicy.
Thank you, Chair.
A couple of questions. We're going to have a reporting process. At what level of reporting? Let's assume for the moment that nobody in the local area cooperates. I never said it, but in Siskiyou or someplace like that. At what level are we talking about reporting, i.e., is the individual or is it, I mean, how far down are we going? Is it going to the individual?
That's a great question. I think it depends on kind of the local agency that develops. So let's say that they do form a GSA, then the information that's reported to the Department of Water Resources is very coarse. They can roll up all of the pumping data and just say, in this basin, we're pumping X number of acre feet. They don't have to tell you well location. They don't have to tell you who's doing the pumping. It's just a generalized number. So that kind of high or coarse resolution data goes to DWR at first. And if that happens and it happens on time, the board never gets involved. If it comes to the board's intervention where they're directly reporting to us, then we're talking about individual extractors. And that's actually a great question. You know, we spent a lot of time thinking about how we're actually going to get people to self-report, right? What's the encouragement to say, hey, by the way, you have to report to the board, plus here's a $100 fee on top of it. Sounds great, doesn't it?
I see why you brought poor young Mr. Sam.
it's his job to figure this all out and send out the notifications. We are looking at remote sensing capabilities. And there's a tool called Metric, which is mapping evapotranspiration at high resolution with internal calibration, I think. That basically uses Landsat satellites. It bounces some different spectral bands off of the crops below. You can tell what's being irrigated, and you can, with some computer magic, figure out how much water is actually coming off those plants. We can use that to then basically say, you know, you're looking at X number of acre feet. We're going to assume it's all groundwater. You didn't report. Here's your bill. So there, you know, there's a different approaches. It's going to be very complicated and complex no matter where and when it happens.
Okay. This morning, Steve Moore, member of the board, was reporting to us on several things, one of which is SB 83 and SB 88. And well logs have heretofore, as I understand it, are kept strictly by the county. You don't have at the state any level to get at that. SB 83 makes these public. How much information is going to be available to me as a citizen to find out what's going on the other side of the fence?
So the well logs historically have been kept at the Department of Water Resources, not at the county. The county may issue a permit, but if there's a well log that's developed, that log is supposed to be turned into DWR. That doesn't always mean that it's happened. So right now, DWR has about 800,000 well logs. Some of them have been digitized, some of them have not. But they're in the process of basically going through all the ones that they have, digitizing them, putting them online. That's going to take a couple of months to do, but they do have funding and they're working on it. Those 800,000 well logs are not all the wells in the state. There are some missing ones and we'll never get those. But eventually they'll be available in some context, at least what's available overall through the Department of Water Resources website. Until that time, they're kind of asking that if people want specific information, they can actually go to DWR, and for a fee, although I'm not sure what that fee is, they'll actually go in and pull those well logs for you and provide you a copy.
Okay. And finally, what do we mean by manage? We are talking about managing, okay? We get an unsustainable circumstance because there is more being pulled than is being replenished. How do we manage? The only thing I see as a management is cutting somebody off.
So there's really two processes. One we call the physical solution, right? You develop some sort of new water for the basin, whether it's stormwater recharge or recycled water or a desalination plant, or you're hooking up to a canal, something that brings more water in. But in most circumstances, you are looking at demand reduction. And so the management approach that is taken by a local agency is probably going to be considerably different than the management approach that's taken by the state water board. So the locals are probably going to go for physical solution or some combination of physical solution plus demand reduction. The state water board doesn't have the technical expertise to do a physical solution. And so if we step in and directly manage a basin, almost certainly we're looking at demand reduction across the board.
Using some form of evapotranspiration off of GS, off of satellite stuff.
Maybe.
Doing that does not 100% quantify what is A, there, B, used, and who, C, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, are we looking at some sort of gasp metering system?
Yes, absolutely. I think that the evapotranspiration is really a first effort, and it would be combined with some sort of metering program. What that metering program looks like is going to be tailored uniquely to each basin, but it's very likely that there'll have to be some combination of both.
I thought I didn't want to go present AB 885 to Northeastern California. Good luck. Thank you.
If I may, sir, well logs, what's that?
Got a well myself.
Just thinking of up in Del Norte County on the Smith River Plain years ago, and I lived and worked up there. This old boy was telling me about a well he dug that morning. Honest to goodness, he dug it 15 feet, and he was pumping 200 gallons a minute. So that brings me to my question. When I'm looking at your map, and I don't know, Eric or Sam, if you've had a chance to take a road trip to go up and look at the Ukiah Valley or the Eel River Valley or the Smith River Valley, if you haven't, I'd love to take you. It's by far some of the prettiest spots of the state. But each one of those are river valleys. And as I just used in my example, there's a very good chance. These aren't basins per se. These are not a bowl of water like you get in the Sacramento Valley or the San Joaquin Valley. These are transient basins. That water is moving through the soils, and people are tapping into those subsurface flows. How are you going to determine sustainability and using this definition? I mean, I think these are going to be challenging examples, and all three of them are listed as medium priority. I think you mentioned workshops. I'm working with the County of Mendocino, and the board up there announced their CEO as the lead on the water agency. She is the water agency. So in terms of resources and ability and capability, these, when you start getting up into Mendocino, Humboldt, and certainly by the time you get to Del Norte County, capacity is quite limited.
Mm-hmm.
I would very much like to work with you, and if you're doing regional workshops, I think there are some folks to the north of us who would be very appreciative of receiving some guidance how to address some of these kinds of basins, because they're not the traditional type of basin. And I certainly would be willing to work with you and open some doors for you guys and make some introductions. But at the very least, I invite you to come north if you haven't had a chance to do that yet, and look at what is a very different scenario than what you're going to find in Stanislaus County or Colusa County or Fresno County.
Tell them what your day job is.
I don't have to. So, anyway, I'm happy to help you out, but I think there's some it's going to be different as we move to the north here.
No, and that's very much appreciated. And if there is any opportunity for Sam or myself or both of us to come and present or talk to people, let us know. I mean, that's really that communication part that we talked about, where in this first couple of years where Sigma's just getting going, we're really spending a lot of time traveling and just going to different basins, talking to different people, and trying just to dispel fears where we can do that and talk about requirements, what we think is going to be necessary. So let us know, and we'll be more than happy to make a trip.
I just had a couple questions. Do you expect there to be very many pumas, just because it seems to me the threat of state intervention has been highly motivating to most locals? And
that's a great question. And we go back and forth all the time between thinking, yeah, we're going to have a lot of pumas, and then no, there won't be any. And unfortunately, we have to have the system in place regardless. You know, we have to make the assumption that we're going to have some and then go forward. And you know, we'll definitely use that same system if later on we kind of take the intervention steps associated with identifying a probationary basin. You know, there's kind of the same reporting elements for probationary basins as there are pumas. So in 2020 or 2022, we could still utilize that same system for a probationary basin. I think that if we do get any pumas, it will be a county that very willingly doesn't want to have anything to do with groundwater management, because there's kind of this county is the first backstop role, and they need to very consciously identify to the department that they don't want to be the GSA. And if that happens, then we'll go from there.
And then my second question is on adjudications. If a basin's already been adjudicated, what is your authority? And I thought there's a provision in the water code, whoever reopens it has to pay, and that's been a restraint on the state board opening some of the adjudications.
So in terms of the second question, yes, constraints with respect of who pays has always been an issue in terms of having the state board participate, especially in groundwater adjudications. To my knowledge, the State Water Board has never participated in a groundwater adjudication. The exception is the Scott River, which is kind of not quite a full groundwater adjudication because they drew these lines around the river, and so there's half the basin that's not managed.
Right, there's actually litigation going on outside the river for adjudication.
Right. So, but for in terms of other adjudicated areas, Sigma specifically identified 29 areas that are exempt. Those are the 29 adjudications that we knew about when the law was written. Basically, they don't have to comply with Sigma. There are some reporting elements, so they have to report groundwater extractions and things like that. But otherwise, they don't have to form a GSA. They don't have to write a sustainability plan, and they're exempt from state board intervention. That only applies to the adjudicated area. The area outside the adjudication, if they're still within that same Bulletin 118 boundary, is subject to all the components of Sigma.
And are any of their basins within your knowledge level having subsidence problems or having saltwater intrusion problems or having potential effect on state infrastructure?
In Region 1?
Well, that are adjudicated that you would have exempted. In other words, are they working there in those basins? Or
So I'm going to answer with a non-answer.
It's okay. You can give me non-answers. I'll understand them.
We funded University of Santa Cruz to actually do a comprehensive evaluation of all 29 adjudications. And that report should be out the first couple weeks of December. It's almost done. We asked them to look at things like, you know, are they actually in sustainable yield? Are they in a safe yield? How much are they actually pumping with respect to how much recharge they're getting? And basically what it shows is that adjudication historically has not universally brought people into sustainability. It's been a political solution to a known problem, and it addresses kind of a fight between whose resources are whose. It doesn't result in sustainability very often. It can, but in many of the adjudications it does not. And it often leaves out certain classes of users. In most adjudications, for example, the environment is not one of the classes of users. It specifically goes to either appropriators or overlying users. And so there are some significant drawbacks to adjudication, in my opinion. There are some benefits in that you do then solidify your groundwater right.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the hydrologically special North Coast, right? You know, I say that in all jest, but at the same time, it's true, right? We are, I'll knock on wood when I say this, there's generally an abundance of high-quality groundwater here, and mm-hmm. therefore I think it's our job to be highly protective of that groundwater, both in sustained yield and quality. A couple questions for you, gentlemen. I think SGMA myself is way, way overdue, right? Is that I, and the drought and the last 4 years offered the opportunity to finally get it up and running. It does seem like it's a work in progress, right? There's the three main bills that started this, but there certainly have been additions to that. Do you foresee additional then planks, in essence, being put in place to SGMA as it goes, or do you foresee that there's enough structural legs to it now to where it becomes, you know, it's enough to have a GSA, it's enough to get going, and we kind of have enough? It seems like some of this, and we talked to Steve Moore, Bill was just mentioning that this morning, and my comment to Steve is that, you know, if it all goes into El Nino tomorrow and we just get an abundance of rain, and God hope that happens, right, that, you know, I hope this doesn't all go away, because this is actually a very, very important and worthwhile exercise that's happened here.
Mm-hmm. I know that's a great question. You know, the North Coast is a little bit hydrologically unique, and if you go and look at some of the places in the southern San Joaquin Valley, for example, even if we get an El Nino this year, the magnitude of the drought, we're essentially in a five-year drought at this point. If you've looked historically, how long do groundwater levels take to respond once you've been in a period of drought to actually recover to pre-drought conditions? It's essentially equal to the length of the drought. So what that means is if you have a five-year drought, it's going to take us 5 years for groundwaters to come back to where they were even in 2010. That's, you know, notwithstanding any of the additional wells that have been put in, the additional development, the acres and acres of new orchard crops that have gone in some parts of the state. And I think that there's this broad recognition that even with a year of El Nino, SGMA's not going to go away. I think it's going to make local decisions more difficult. So we've been talking with a local group that's forming a water district, and, you know, what happens if they get 50 inches of rain this year is probably going to make it difficult for that local entity to decide to tax themselves, you know, potentially hundreds or thousands of dollars a year for a groundwater management basin, when, you know, rain just falls from the sky. Yeah. In other parts of the state, I don't think it's going to help as much as people are thinking it will. And, you know, to date, we still haven't gotten the El Nino. So fingers crossed that we do get it, but we'll see what happens.
We're very lucky here, too, in that there was we have the Santa Rosa Plain, in particular the Sonoma Valley and then Petaluma Valley, as being highly characterized as the Bulletin 118 upgrade that's happened in the last couple of years, the USGS study that is just an incredible tool. The one thing, though, is that that does have boundaries to it, right? That was not a finite study, mm-hmm. right? And at the same time, I have to ask you, because, you know, we see this year, especially in a condition of drought, the State Board Water Rights comes in with a prioritization of these four sub-basins or priority watersheds that recognizes the surface groundwater connection and starts to then put restrictions on that. And those areas right now are outside the basin boundary of, say, Santa Rosa Plain, right? So Santa Rosa Plain, I could see very much, and Sonoma Valley same way, Petaluma same way, right? They're kind of defined boundaries of basins. But yet the moves by State Water Board in the Water Right Division on those four priority basins are outside of those. And so it's very interesting that, well, and the question, the interaction between surface and groundwater here, there's very much that connection, and there's very much a regulatory connection that got exercised, especially this last year. Does that then, because your eight criteria that you had up there, does that then elevate the criteria or the priority of that basin, the condition of basin? Does it turn from a yellow to a purple or to a orange now, or?
It certainly could, although in terms of SGMA, there is no difference between a medium and a high. So the real question is going from a low to a medium, low to high, or, you know, something that elevates into the SGMA applicability zone. But you're right, you know, SGMA only applies to a Bulletin 118 groundwater basin, and that's there right. are many parts of the state that are outside of a Bulletin 118 basin, the fractured bedrock of the foothills or the Sierra Nevada, the volcanics in Sonoma County and some of the other North Coast regions up in Siskiyou County and Modoc County. And so how do you address groundwater extractions in those areas, particularly when those extractions may be having negative effects or adverse effects on surface water flows? you know, in that circumstance, the state board can exercise their authority under the public trust doctrine to look at this kind of groundwater surface water connection. There's also significant authority at the county level, and you know, that's, you know, perhaps politically difficult to move through in some circumstances or in most circumstances. But, you know, the counties have always had the authority to look at land use, to look at water use, to look at well permitting, and use those authorities to manage resources as they see fit. And so there may be an opportunity in that scenario for the counties to step in those other areas where SGMA doesn't apply.
Well, and it seems like the opportunity for counties when it comes to land use, for sure, and some of that type of thing, you know, preservation of recharge areas, alignment of recharge areas so that you capture an area and you have a hydrologic connectivity. You could have ecological functions that come with that. You can have aesthetics. You can preserve ag. You could do a lot of really cool things. Mm-hmm. Does SGMA contemplate that? Does contemplate the local authority then to land use? Land use is a piece of this. This isn't just about water wells and consumptive use of water wells here. Mm-hmm. This is very much a land use issue.
It's almost entirely a land use issue.
Yes.
And, you know, part of the reason that the state is in, or some of the basins are in, significant conditions of overdraft or, you know, having these negative groundwater surface water interactions is that the land use permitting has just essentially not contemplated that their resource might be finite. And SGMA does contemplate land use, so there are requirements that the GSA and land use entities have to coordinate with each other, essentially, and have to communicate, but there's no clear specific requirement that a GSA gets to regulate land use. That's still going to be at kind of the county level or maybe the city level.
That probably should be.
Yeah.
But it seems like at the other side of that, though, Eric, it would be a feedback loop that could certainly go into the management spectrum of what could happen here, just as I would expect CASGEM to. I myself am part of a little watershed group over in West County in Sebastopol. I have a well. There's about, from what I've been told, there's between 40 to 60,000 wells in Sonoma County. So a lot of wells, a high density, which you actually showed up there. I would expect CASGEM could also inform, right, that CASGEM data as land use and subsidence and all that data should then inform the management decisions that happen here. Mm-hmm. You know, big surprise, by the way, that an increasing number of wells into a groundwater basin as you develop land and use land and make it less pervious, that we're going to have an effect on groundwater supply. And what's very interesting, you know, we go up every year to Sacramento to WQCC, which mm-hmm. is where the gathering of all the regional boards. And I'm always amazed that the other things going on in parts of the state, you know. And after a couple of days up there, I got to say, I'm kind of like Dorothy. I'm heading home. It's like there's no place like home, man. Because the stuff that they face in the Southlands, Central Valley, those are unbelievable problems. And up here, we're unique. We're unique, as I see it. Our biggest issues, as I see it, is protection of groundwater, water quality and quantity in the same go. I think that SGMA is a very important tool. I'm interested to see how it develops and grows. We're miles ahead, I think, because of some of the local efforts of where we're at least right here.
I would agree.
Yeah, and it's very, very interesting. At the same time, Tom Howard has encouraged us to, you know, look at our flow authority and water right authority. At the same time, this year, I talked to Tom for a few minutes up at WQCC, and, you know, he actually said publicly up there that, you know, that he's firmly convinced that the groundwater surface water connection is really the biggest issue, mm-hmm. right, to surface water flows. Groundwater depletion, consumptive use of groundwater mm-hmm. is one of the biggest issues with surface water flow. For us, where we have anadromous fish that have protections to it, that all that stuff where we work really hard to do all this work to restore and beneficial and maintain beneficial use, well, it's all for naught if you got no water in these watersheds.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting.
Very, very true.
I'm glad you boys are here. Thanks for coming. You know, and I look forward actually to see how this goes. I think SGMA is a work in progress. And as I see, and it sounds like it's right, that there's more to be added to this as it goes forward.
There could be, you know, it's unlikely that they'll add anything statutorily, but, you know, as the regulations develop, I think you're going to see a whole new dimension of SGMA. And that was always contemplated by the legislature when they developed it, that DDR would develop these regulations going forward.
Well, and I think I would caveat to say that it depends on what happens in the next couple of years weather-wise.
Yes.
I think if we have projected drought and we continue to see what's been going on in some areas of the state, I think it could be radically different.
I agree. A whole new...
Thank you very much for coming.
Board Member Minton, and then our executive director, and then I have couple of brief comments. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have a question as I listened actually to Board Member Jostie and then as continue down the line with this topic of groundwater surface water interaction. This question started to form in my mind, and I might have trouble even putting words to it, but I know that in at least in Sonoma County's groundwater basins, and I would imagine some of these other North Coast groundwater basins, there are certainly folks who have wells who are at this point assuming that their wells are groundwater, but it's really not clear because they're close enough to a stream, and we have the Stetson maps, but those are draft maps and can't really be used to make any determination about whether it's groundwater or surface water. So to this point, I think a lot of people have been saying, you know, it's a well, assuming it's groundwater, and sort of staying out of the water rights system. If they fall into one of these basins, it seems like SGMA sort of captures you one way or the other if you're in one of these basins, that then you have a well that you haven't been reporting on, assuming that it's groundwater, but then you would end up reporting under SGMA. And I guess what I'm wondering is, who decides in the end? Is there going to be some sorting out as all of this reporting happens on these wells? Is there going to be some sorting out of figuring out whether wells really should be reporting as part of groundwater or should be moving over to the water rights system? And if so, would the groundwater management agencies be leading that charge, or would the state board be thinking more about delineating the, you know, something like the Stetson maps more clearly and adopting it as gospel?
I'll start and then I'll kind of turn the permitting question over to Sam. But, you know, this idea that there's really a difference between surface water and groundwater is really, in some sense, not true. I mean, it's true legally, which is unfortunate. We have this whole category of subterranean streams it was put into the water code back in 1914. And, you know, those wells that are in known inflowing channels are regulated as surface water extractions. But, you know, the difference between that and a percolating groundwater well in some cases is really not true, I guess. So SGMA is specific and says that it exempts subterranean streams from regulation with the idea that they're already being regulated under a board water right authority. Otherwise, they could fall into a SGMA regulatory scheme if they're in one of these higher medium priority basins. And if they are of a size class that the GSA wants to regulate. So the GSA has local authority to say, you know, we're only going to regulate wells that pump over X number of acre feet per year. And that's a local decision. Does that answer your question? Whether is there another permitting question there?
I guess. Well, I have one follow up on that. Is just that then if is there some, would there be some method? I mean, I guess that's up to the GSAs about if there's some method where people would have to report my well is in a subterranean stream and that's why I'm not under your authority, and then so maybe people would be self selecting which system they're feeding into.
It's a good point and an important question, and I think it's useful to point out that you're not in a subterranean stream until the water board makes a decision that you are in a subterranean stream. And as Eric said, the language in SGMA is very specific to the term subterranean stream, and so that's where the board holds its permitting authority with respect to water rights. I used to work in water rights before I moved over, and I actually did a little bit of implementation of the North Coast and stream flow policy, so I have a bit of familiarity with the issue. But I think to your question of deciding which system you fall in, that it's safe to say that you could assume that you're SGMA if you're not part of a subterranean stream, that designation maybe hasn't been issued.
Okay. Yeah, that was my follow-up, is that it seems like in areas covered by the Stetson maps that are in draft, then there are no subterranean streams, essentially, unless there's some particular property where because it's a draft, there's no subterranean stream.
And that's, so I think, part of the reason they're draft is that they were developed as part of that North Coast in-stream flow policy and then didn't get implemented, because I know they were a good first cut kind of thing, but they weren't really picked up as a regulatory tool.
Thank you.
Matt St. John, our executive director.
Thank you. First of all, Eric and Sam, thank you so much for a very clear and comprehensive presentation and facilitating this really great dialogue. My question is, what do you see as the role for the regional boards, and specifically, what can we do to help? Needless to say, we've got plenty of work to do, so we need to think strategically about how to assist state board on statewide efforts like this, but we want to help where we can help.
No, the great question again. And that's even a question that we're still kind of wrestling with. What's the state board's role in some of these scenarios? You know, let's say we get to 2020 or 2022 and DWR doesn't fail anybody. What do we do then? Looking at, to get back to your specific question, I think there's a huge role for the regional boards as a technical assistance tool. And that's specific to that undesirable result of degraded water quality. But I think it also factors into the surface water and groundwater interaction work. And as Tom Howard mentioned, you know, maybe some of the flow authorities that the regional boards could look at. I think that establishing flow objectives is probably the single most helpful thing in terms of that component of that specific undesirable result in SGMA. Looking also at what the GSAs are likely to be tasked to do, and you know, this is maybe looking at the draft regulations that aren't out yet, but it's very likely that the department will ask that each GSA do a really thorough assessment of water quality conditions in the basin, and you know, having the regional board there as a tool that the GSA could come and talk to and look at specific, maybe there's loading issues that, you know, the regional board staff are experts in that the GSA doesn't know about, or kind of helping the GSA frame a management approach in certain specific regions of the basin. That could be a really good technical resource. And then lastly, I think there's going to be a significant in the permitting role. You know, the GSAs, if they need to put together a permit for maybe it's a groundwater recharge facility, maybe they need to do a 401 cert or something that requires a regional board permit, you know, that's going to tie into SGMA through that GSA permitting action.
And then I just wonder, are you done, Matt? I'm sorry. Yeah. I just wanted to ask a question. I heard one attorney come up with the idea that if you're in a groundwater basin that's currently sustainable but might have a lot of growth, if you joined a SGMA exercise, the opt-out, then you have an insurance policy against, in the future, against being pumaized. And I wondered whether you had a reflection upon that.
So explain that again.
That you join in.
Okay.
You exercise the opt-out, and then there doesn't appear to be act remedies for quite some time, even if you started to end up in an overdraft situation.
Yeah, so if you're sustainable and you form a GSA right off the bat, well, then you don't have to do anything until 2022. That's 6+ years
yeah.
away. So that's a fair amount of time. And you get to 2020 and 22 and you show, you know, my groundwater levels haven't really changed. It's going to be difficult for the board to really take an action then. You know, very clearly, if there's no plan, I think the board would take an action. We don't need DWR permission to do so in that case. But if they've developed even a rudimentary plan and kind of gone through the paces, then, yeah, it could take a while before the board actually intervenes.
And then I just wanted to, this is just a statement, but I think you're correct on changing the legislation unless there's an infrastructure catastrophe. And at that point, then I think something would go through the state legislature. I want to ask you, pursuant to that, I just found out recently the state water aqueduct is designed for subsidence. And do you know how many feet down it's the design parameter is?
I don't know how far the design parameter is.
Either.
But it is true that it is designed. We just saw a neat report. I'm trying to remember where it was.
Which is sort of a pessimistic thought. I mean, a lot of foresight, but anyway.
But they've narrowed it down to certain segments now where they can say, here's where we're having a lot of problems, even almost more so than were designed. And so they know where that subsidence is occurring and what they need to do about it.
Could I have you email something on that if you know?
Sure. It'll take me a while to dig through it and find where it was, but I think I can get it.
Then lastly, there's this very peculiar element in SGMA, and That is in 1969 when the state legislature was looking at who should administer water quality. They decided to make it the old State Water Rights Board, which is now, because there's an inherent conflict of interest with the Department of Water Resources. And so the groundwater legislature, and presumably we can set water quality standards and that might affect groundwater pumping. So this is sort of a very unusual situation. Do you think that's stable? If you want to look out a 10, 20-year time period.
Yes and no.
I can see you work in Sacramento, and I'm a lawyer, so I'll yes and no you right back.
You know, SGMA wasn't designed to be a new water quality control approach. I mean, really, we talk about the three Ps, plumes, projects, and pumping. So is it drawing plumes into drinking water sources? Is it is there a project that could affect water quality? Or, you know, kind of looking at what actively pumping does to draw existing contamination. That actually, the contamination control metrics come through Porter Cologne and things that are already there that the regional board can already implement. I guess I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, I just wanted to thank you personally, one, for incredible patience. I'm sure we are exciting, but not that exciting for your long afternoon. And it is difficult to travel here because I travel quite a bit to Sacramento. So I really appreciate it. And
it's
I think
pleasure.
It does help us do a much better job as a regional board. And congratulate you guys. Had enough foresight to start before the legislation did. You know, very advanced thinkers, obviously.
Great. Well, thank you much. It's our pleasure to be here. And again, let us know if there's ever any questions or any follow-up that we can do, and we'll be happy to.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public that wants to ask a question? I'll see, we finally got you all worn out. thank you. yeah. I could have given a wake-up call ahead of time. Okay. Yeah. All we got to do is say more hearings and we can clear the room. 10, executive...